Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time to check in with the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Kevin Most. Doc, good morning. It's the cold and flu weather, and I have a couple questions about this. The symptoms from COVID to the common cold to the flu, can you talk about what the differences are?
Yeah, Bob, you know, really probably the biggest thing is that COVID and the flu are going to almost mimic each other because they share a lot of symptoms. They share fever, they share cough, shortness of breath, fatigue, sore throat, runny nose, muscle aches, headaches, vomiting. Those are going to be found in both COVID as well as in flu. The general cold, you often don't get a fever at all. You're going to be a little congested. You may have a sore throat from the drainage, but you're not going to get that fever. You're not going to get those muscle aches and body aches. So it's just going to be much more mild symptoms from just the regular cold. Mm-hmm. We all have to understand that all three of those illnesses we're talking about are caused by viruses. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we have to rush off to get antibiotics, but we certainly take the opportunity to get treated for influenza or COVID early on in the illness. So testing is very important if you aren't so sure as to which illness you have.
So it sounds like the symptoms of the flu and the symptoms of this current strain of COVID are almost identical.
They are. Yep. You know, with flu, you're going to get that sudden onset often of high fever, spiking fever, and chills, where COVID kind of eases in a little bit more. So the onset of the illness will be a little bit different between the two. But for the most part, all the symptoms after that are pretty much the same. And the reason being is both of these viruses attack this upper airway as well as the lower airway, the lungs. That's what those two affect. Where the common cold is often kept mainly up in the sinuses and up in the upper airway, so they won't get into the lungs. You know, you don't get a pneumonia from the common cold, but you certainly can get pneumonia from influenza and from COVID.
Does COVID affect the stomach, digestive issues?
Yeah, that's the bad thing about COVID, if you remember early on. COVID just, you know, says, hey, you know what, I'm going to go wherever I want to go. And that's why we have problems with the heart with COVID. That's why we had brain fog, because it actually even gets into the brain and can actually cause stomach problems as well. So it's a virus that says, I'm going to go where I want to go, and until you figure a way to stop me, either by vaccines or natural antibodies, I'm going to continue to spread. And that's why long COVID is such an issue, because you say long COVID, but it could be anything from pulmonary to brain fog to GI problems to heart problems. So we have to understand that this illness is around, it's going to stick around, and very important for us to try to protect ourselves and decrease the spread.
Now, if you had COVID and maybe for whatever reason didn't test, so you never knew you had it, and then eventually it goes, but and of course you put people at risk around you because it's so contagious, but other than that, would there be any health issues if you had COVID and never knew you did?
No, it would be just spreading it and then also watching for the symptoms of long COVID. But certainly the ability to get free tests is still here. You can get those tests from the government. So testing at home is key because, like you said, we want to stop the spread of it, especially as we're coming into, you know, it's going to snow tomorrow. Not a lot of people are going to be outside running around. Well, tomorrow's Halloween. They may be. But certainly, you know, we're going to look at, as we go indoors more, we want to identify illnesses, whether it be influenza or whether it be COVID or just a regular cold, and to try to stop the spread of that.
And what kind of antibody protection do you get after COVID, after a cold, after the flu?
Yeah, the thing about, it's interesting, the thing about after a cold, you don't get too much antibody protection. And I say that because there are hundreds and hundreds of different viruses that can cause the common cold. Mm. So the chance of you getting exposed to the same little virus twice is pretty low. That's why people say, oh gosh, this is my third cold of the year. Yeah, that can happen because there are multiple different viruses. Mm-hmm. For the common cold. But for COVID, once you get COVID, you have pretty good natural immunity, and it looks like it might wane after, you know, somewhere between 3 and 6 months, but certainly you have good protection. And the same with influenza. But again, we have to understand, influenza, even the influenza shot, we're vaccinating you for 4 different strains of influenza. And normally we'll have at least 2 different strains circulating. So again, influenza is another one you can get more than once based on your luck and the exposure to the strains that are circulating.
Are we going to get a flu mist for self-administration? What's happening with that?
Yeah, how about it? You know, we've talked about flu mist in the past, where it was actually taken off the market for a season because it really didn't look like it worked well. And they reformulated it, and now it's come back, and it's approved for use for anybody over the age of 2 to 49. And now what they're looking at is saying, wait a second, we want to be able to just be able to send this to people's home and let them administer it themselves. So that's being tested right now. And probably what's even more exciting is the NIH and Dartmouth are looking at doing the exact same with a COVID vaccine, making it a flu mist and making it so that it can be self-administered. So people who are, you know, phobia to needles, don't want to get shots, don't want to get 2 shots, certainly they're going to probably have the option within the next year or two to take a flu mist, just like we do with allergy medications, whether it's Flonase or Nasonex or Astilin. So a lot of people are already using this technique to deliver a medication. They'll be using that technique to deliver the vaccine themselves. So fascinating that it could be as early as next year for influenza, and I would say 25 probably for both COVID and influenza to be delivered via a nasal spray.
That'll be good. Before we move off of COVID, I did want to ask you about Paxlovid. It's no longer going to be provided to the general public at no cost, is it?
No. You know, we all were very fortunate that the medication got developed as quickly as it did and that it was provided to us. And the interesting thing, I think, is, you know, the federal government paid about just a little bit over $500 for a course of the medication. And Pfizer announced not too long ago, as a matter of fact, last week, that a 5-day course would now be closer to $1,400, which is a little concerning. Now, that certainly is just going to be the list price. There'll be negotiations with insurance companies. And we have to remember that for the next 2 years, a year and a half, Medicaid and Medicare will be covered with Paxlovid, and that was just due to the COVID laws that were put in place for those two groups of individuals.
Can you get Paxlovid and store it? Will it keep?
Well, you can, and it probably will keep, but you're not supposed to. In other words, you shouldn't be hoarding.
No, we're not encouraging that or endorsing that.
Not.
I was just curious. You know me. I'm Mr. Curious,
yes.
Doc. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of other things here. First, I'm interested in what the FDA is doing. They're moving on banning menthol cigarettes. Why have they been pushing this?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Massachusetts and California banned them about 2 years ago. And what they have found in all of their studies is that menthol-flavored cigarettes, not only they are more addictive, but they also are ease individuals to get onto smoking. Regular cigarette smoking can be very harsh. Menthol softens that up. Next thing you know, now you are addicted to those. So it's a lot of young individuals, and unfortunately, the marketing is towards the minorities and the young individuals to get them hooked on these on cigarettes, unfortunately. So now we're saying, hey, you know, take away the menthol, and not only will you see less people start, you'll see more people quit, because we know the impact that cigarettes has on lung cancer.
Now, that would be a good thing. The Walgreens pharmacist walkout, does that mean that doctors are calling in prescriptions to other pharmacies right now?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, and last week it was Walgreens, and now CVS and Rite Aid have said we're going to step up. And I think people have to understand, too, that this is not about money. This is not about pharmacists not making enough money. This is about them feeling that they are understaffed and that it is not safe for what they're doing. if you look at what the pharmacists do right now with the vaccinations, as the population ages, more are needing medications, and many pharmacies are becoming clinics. So what they're saying is, hey, we are doing way too much. This is not safe. We need to do it. So what's going to happen, and it's going to happen as early as today, it'll be interesting to see if Chicagoland pharmacies are impacted, but a doctor may call in a prescription to a pharmacy and the patient will go pick it up and there won't be a pharmacist. Now, if that's an antibiotic and something they need acutely, they're going to have to call that into another pharmacy or find a pharmacy that is staffed.
Finally, there's some new research on the excellent health benefits of golf. Did you do this study, Dr. Most? Yeah. You and Dave Bennett conduct this study? Is that what happened here?
it's about time somebody said something good about golf, right? And Dave, I'm sure, is laughing and smiling.
Yes, I am.
Yes, but this is a great study that came out of Finland. But really what it looked at is individuals who walked about 3.5-4 miles a day or played 18 holes of golf walking showed an increased cognitive function immediately following the exercise. So when we look at this and we say, okay, what are we looking at? It's the increased blood flow, it's the aerobic, it's a social interaction on the golf course. And what they did then is measured cognitive function and said, wow, compared to individuals who didn't, these individuals had much better and increased cognitive function. So it was really, it's fascinating. Now, you can't get in a cart and drive around 18 holes and think you're going to do better. It's really the physical walking and carrying the golf clubs that does it.
Did they look at men, women, different age groups?
Yeah, this was all over the age of 65, so it was kind of nice because that's when we really start to worry about it. So individuals saying, oh, I'm going to take the SAT, I'm going to go play golf, probably not going to get you the cognitive bump that you need. You might want to study for the SAT instead of playing golf.
Okay.
But certainly those who are older, it certainly looks like the physical activity in golf in particular is helpful.
There you go. That's why you're so sharp, Dave.
Yeah, and plus there's math involved, especially when you have as many strokes as I do.
Let me know when there's a 16 in softball study. Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine. More next Monday. Thanks, Doc.
Take care, guys.